All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. I want to welcome you this morning to our April HPVQI conference on April 11th, 2017. And thank you for delaying a week. Also, give you a heads up that our next call will be on May the 2nd at 7:30 in the morning. There's a couple of you that I saw at the ALF conference in Chicago a few weeks ago, and I asked those that I talked to if they had any feedback, any things that you would like to see or have info on. And so I have provided on the agenda some resources. Some of the feedback that I got was that you would like to have more resources available to give to your patients and to have access to for yourself. Last month, I made mention of a webinar that had some really good information about talking to patients and increasing the rates and some things that they were having success with. So I put that on the resources paper that I sent on the agenda and noted some of the time. So you'll see like some things happen at minute 26, second 11, where maybe I've previewed it for you and you could just go in and watch just some portions of it. While I do recommend the entire conference, it is excellent. If you'd like to just take a peek at some of the like the text messaging reminder things that they're doing and the cost effectiveness of that. And there's some discussions about hesitancy, which are excellent as well. I have noted the times that they occur, so you could just quickly grab it. Additionally, I have put on some information about graphics and other resources that you can print and have in your exam rooms. So there are some other things that people wanted, which is to know their progress and if they're meeting the requirements and more time to talk to each other. So we are going to try to accommodate that in the next coming months and get some more feedback to you. So watch for that. We are going to turn the time now over to Dr. Kepka and her invited guests.
So we're going to have Laura do the introductions. So Diane Crawford is the founder and executive director of the Crawford Crew Foundation, TCC. The Crawford Crew is a small, volunteer-driven nonprofit headquartered in Westerville, Ohio, which focuses on raising awareness of cervical cancer. In the summer of 2009, at the age of 43, Diane was diagnosed with cervical cancer. Later that year, the Crawford Crew was born. Diane's "I've never met a stranger" mentality is what has opened many doors for the TCC and enabled them to educate and support so many people. Diane holds a Bachelor of Science degree in communications from Western Michigan University. In her 20-plus years working in corporate America, she held marketing, logistics, PR, and sales positions. None of these positions prepared her fully for what would be her passion and role for the rest of her life, a wife, mother of three, and cancer survivor, dedicated to telling everyone who would listen how to prevent cervical cancer. Diane works closely with the Ohio State University, the James Cancer Hospital, and Otterbein University. She is a member of the Ohio Partners for Cancer Control HPV Vaccination Committee and has been interviewed by local radio, television, and publications, and has been a guest speaker at the local ACS meetings, school, and community events. You can contact Diane via her website at www.thecrawfordcrew.org, or I also have her phone number and email address that I can send out after the call. So thank you so much for joining us, Diane.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me.
We really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk with our Hub and Spoke program here in the Intermountain West, especially calling in from Ohio. That's so generous and thoughtful of you. So the point of our calls here is, in terms of inviting HPV advocates, is we know that so seldom do pediatricians and primary care providers who predominantly serve children do they encounter HPV-related cancers among their patients. So we feel that giving them more background on what it's like to have an HPV-related cancer and how it affects your life and the life of those you love could help motivate and inspire pediatricians to strongly recommend the HPV vaccine. So Diane, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with an HPV-related cancer?
Yes. So as you heard in my bio there, I was diagnosed at 43 with cervical cancer, and I had no idea. I really didn't know about HPV, or didn't have much knowledge about it until after my diagnosis. And I had a routine annual with my gynecologist, and they found abnormal cells. At that point is when they notified me after a colposcopy and such that it was cervical cancer that we needed to take care of, pretty quickly. I don't know how much you want me to share, but I do know that what's important to tell you is that we caught it early enough because of my annual exams and the fact that I'd never missed an exam since I was, 20 years old, and never tested positive for HPV either. So I was fortunate in that I had a radical hysterectomy and did not have to have chemo or radiation.
Have you had long-term effects from your hysterectomy?
Yes. So lymphedema is one, is something I'll have with me forever, which is in my legs, which is painful, but hey, I'm here. So that would be one effect that's long-term. Of course, scars. I had my gynonc, I was fortunate to be able to use the Da Vinci robot to do my surgery. So I have skin scars. So that's long-term, but no big deal. I would say the biggest long-term effects from being diagnosed, not so much the hysterectomy itself, is just mentally. Hearing that diagnosis, having, 3 young children, working and having, everything's going grand, to find out that I had cancer is something that lives with me constantly. I have survivor guilt. I have anxiety. Even though we started our foundation, I feel like I need to do more every day because I think it's crazy that people are being diagnosed with cancers related to HPV and that are actually dying because it shouldn't happen. Depression. So I guess when you ask me long-term effects from the treatments, it's really, I went into menopause maybe a little bit earlier than I would have, lymphedema and skin scars. But really, it's more mentally, Dr. Deanna, than anything.
So can you tell me a little bit about the survivor's guilt? What do you mean by that?
Well, so what I mean is that, I had a radical hysterectomy. I did not have to go through chemo, radiation, trying to figure out how to get to my appointments, trying to deal with everything that survivors go through that have had or are going through chemo and radiation. So, I go in and speak. I volunteer to speak and educate where I can. And sometimes I'll be up there on stage at a college in front of 300 students thinking, okay, well, you survived this, but really it's no big deal because I'm down at the James Cancer Hospital or I'm talking to Dr. Pasquette with these folks in Appalachia, mm-hmm. and these people are going through so much more than me. So that's really, mm-hmm. But what pulls me back, Dr. Deanna, is where I just say, you know what, we all have a purpose and this is my purpose now. So I try to remind myself that, does that make sense? I hope it does. I just feel bad that people have to go through what they have to go through.
I'm assuming that when you had your radical hysterectomy, it was, you weren't intending to have more children at that time.
Correct. So at that, exactly. We had 3 very healthy young children, and yes, that is correct.
That for women who had it at a younger age or were still planning to have children, I'm sure you can empathize with how difficult that would be.
Oh my gosh, totally. I mean, I've met survivors in that situation. I've read about them and it breaks my heart because knowing what I know now about prevention, we have to do more to educate. We have to get our pediatricians out there to help us and their staff to continue to do what they're doing and even more so to be strongly recommending this, the vaccine. So yeah, I feel for those women that and those families that have not been able to, or those, partners have not been able to have children because of cervical cancer.
So how did this diagnosis affect your relationship with your partner or with your family?
Well, so my husband and I, you know, going through any type of surgery obviously slows everybody down, I think, you know, would make sense. But being that it was, you know, cervical cancer and the whole sexual, you know, sexual drive and feeling like you still want to be intimate, that's something that kind of, you know, still goes on. I'm 7+ years a survivor, but again, it goes back into the mental part of it, like, you know, feeling not as intimate for various, you know, just because of what I went through. With our kiddos, it's our kids are, we have a daughter who's 20, a son who just turned 16, a son who just turned 14, and they are so impressive to my husband and me because they're advocates. They're advocates of their mm-hmm. schools. So changing the relationship or impacting the family, everybody in the family, you know, it's kind of like out of the storm. I don't know what the quote is, but exactly, but basically that negative, what happened negative to us also turned into a positive. My kids are, you know, equally as passionate, and they're still, you know, they still are little thinkers and they still make us mad. But at the end of the day, you know, we're all like, okay, it can be so much worse than this. And so the impact has really been with my husband and I, it's all good, but it's just, you always have, there's always that little extra tension or concern, you know, about it coming back, the cancer coming back in other areas,
right.
Even though we're pretty sure, you know, positive it's not going to come back, but you always have that in the back of your mind once you've been affected by it.
So did you receive the HPV vaccine for your children? And what were your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. Yes. So our daughter, who is the oldest, she has some special needs and learning challenges. And with the help of our pediatrician and our gynecologist, we delayed her vaccines just because, you know, just maturity-wise.
Special needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So she mm-hmm. finished her hers at the age of 16. But then our boys, my youngest, who's 14, he just finished his in January. And my middle guy finished his when he was 14. So they got their vaccines, no questions asked. With the younger ones, it's basically, hey, you're getting this vaccine because it's going to prevent you from getting cancer like mommy got. And if this existed when mommy was your age, you know, we wouldn't have gone through what we went through, you know, we've been going through. So absolutely, they've all three had it. And, you know, of course, no problems, no concerns, no reactions. It's all good.
That's great. So what messages would you like to share with the pediatricians who are on this call? For them and their healthcare teams regarding cervical cancer prevention and HPV vaccination?
Well, first of all, I want to thank everybody on the call for, you know, being part of this call and this initiative because it's so very important. And I and my family and I have a great relationship with our pediatrician. We love Dr. Libby. And what she helps us do is to go out and communicate to other pediatricians and other just general practitioners even, is that to make that strong recommendation to vaccinate, to talk to these families when their kids are, you know, 10, 11, 12, to have them start the vaccine at 11 to 12 years old, to make sure that they are following up, you know, and coming back and having that next appointment, whether depending on their age, if they're, you know, with the new recommendations, if they can do the 2-shot or the 3-shot, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure that they're following up and coming back. But I know there's, you know, all of us have different personalities, and pediatricians are no different. You are experts, you are angels in your field. And I think when you sit down and speak to these parents and these kiddos, I just from a mother, I want you to tell me what I need to do to protect my child from any disease or from any illness that they may be able to contract. And if it's something as simple as getting, you know, in my terms, it's simple to get the vaccine. There's, as you guys know, there's healthcare insurance out there to cover it. If there's not, you know, call organizations like mine to help you figure out how to pay for it. But really just to thank you for what you're doing and to ask you to continue to highly recommend the vaccine and to help these parents understand when the parents are gone, when my husband and I are gone and my kids are on their own with their own families, their own grandchildren, I want them to be protected because when I'm gone, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to protect them like I can, you know, right now. So that's really my message.
Very, very well put. I think you had a lot of great insight and kind of showed the important role that pediatricians have on protecting the health of our children when we are around and when we're not around. So we do have a question from Rebecca Kincaid. What would you tell families that are hesitant to get the HPV vaccine because it is a newer vaccine?
So I get those questions a lot, and thank you, Rebecca, for the question. What I do tell everyone is that, first of all, the vaccine just had its 10-year anniversary. I believe it was last year. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. This is no longer a new vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not a doctor, but so number one, it's not new, and something new would be it just came out in the past year or 6 months, and we have no proof that it's that it's doing what it's supposed to do. But so I would say one, I don't feel that it's new, and two, I would say, and this is what I tell them is, please get educated. Please go back and talk to your doctor. Don't sit on the internet and look at sources that you can't validate. Go to reliable sources, the CDC, the NCI, the cancer, hospitals and affiliations that truly are doing what's in the best interest of their patients, and educate yourself about the vaccine and how it has saved so many lives and how the incidents are going down in areas where the vaccine is being given. So,
comment I would add to that is that we know millions of doses of this vaccine have been given in the United States, and there have been no significant side effects that are any more serious than any other vaccine that we give to our children. The most yes. common side effects are fainting, pain at the site of injection. Do we have any other questions? Yeah. Oh, any other comments, Diane?
I was just going to say, I pass out and I have weird feelings when I get blood drawn. So I don't like to get my blood drawn. And I had, you've made a very good point there, that it's no different than, having blood drawn, getting other shots or vaccines, as far as adverse effects.
And it is recommended that adolescents lay down after they receive this vaccine because of that syncope or fainting side effect that happens rarely, but does happen. Yep. Any other questions? Anyone else have any comments for Diane? She did a fabulous job telling her story.
Oh, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Do you have anything else you'd like to share? We heard another comment from Darcy. Thank you so much for sharing your message and experiences.
Oh, Darcy, thank you. I'm happy to. I'll talk all day if you let me.
Anyone else? All right. Thanks so much, Diane. We really, really appreciate your time, and we will follow up with you soon to talk about next steps and how we can work together in the future.
But thank you so much, and I will drop off. And if like you said, if anybody has questions or anything going forward, definitely reach out. And I'm happy and honored to be part of the work you guys are doing out there in the coalition. So again, thank you. Thank you very much for asking me to be your guest today.
We really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye, guys. See you. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you for participating, Diane. Dawn, are you on and able to hear me at this point?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay, can we just go ahead?
Okay, so just a little bit of background. I'm the QI specialist with UPIC, working with Dr. Liu, and I've worked on some other immunization projects, including HPV, and I just have been super impressed with your project and the focus on the cancer survivors and stuff. I think it's been really a powerful way to approach it, so I'm impressed with that. And then I am just going to share a little bit about the PDSA and change ideas that have been shared with me last month. I'll let Dr. White tell theirs. But the Bozeman group, they shared their change idea a couple months ago in one of the calls with scrubbing their schedule, and then huddling, communicating about everybody who's eligible that day to receive it, and then they're also tracking for themselves patients that are eligible and actual vaccines given each day, and they're including all of the clinicians in their group, even if they aren't participating in the project. But they've also made it a point to share the talking points with the staff and put laminated information sheets in each of the rooms. And they're also sharing these cancer survivor videos with all the staff and providers, which I think is probably pretty impactful as far as getting a consistent message throughout the team. There was Diane Liu's group at University of Pediatrics said that they have been focusing on huddles, but the scrubbing the schedule on its own wasn't working. I also thought it was really a great idea. The Laramie physicians have been lowering the age that they offer the vaccine. They had been really encouraging it at the 12-year well check, but have started discussing and offering it at the 11-year-old well check. At Cheyenne Children's Clinic, providers are giving more education on HPV to the parent and patients, and they also have posters in all the exam rooms.
Fabulous. That's a lot of good information. Dr. White, do you want to unmute yourself and tell us what your clinic has been doing?
Yes. So we took a very low-tech approach. We were having trouble getting the different nurses, MAs, and people who would float through our clinic to be sure to check the immunization status of all of our children and adolescents. And so what we did was we decided we would enlist the services of the parents and family. And so we took paper, little strips about 2 inches wide, and just cut them along a piece of purple paper. And on this is printed, are my immunizations up to date? And then on that, it has the patient's name and date of birth and the parent's name and phone number. And then there's a place at the bottom for signature. And the nurse or the provider seeing the patient has to sign that, give it back to the parent, and they have to turn it in at the front desk. So they get the slip when they check in, and then they turn it in at the front desk as they're leaving. And what this does is this slip of paper enters them in a raffle at the end of the month for a $25 gift card for Walmart, since that's kind of one of the main stores in our town. And this has actually been very exciting to the parents and the kids. And we've had teens who in the past refused to get the immunization who said they would do it because they might win this gift card. So it's worked in ways that we didn't think possible as far as motivating the patients. So it's pretty simple and relatively low cost. I mean, $25 a month is not a big investment for the one winner. We've been doing it now. We've had 3 winners, and our numbers are up quite a bit for immunizations across the board in all age groups, but, of course, including HPV. And I think our biggest kind of moaners before were the teens who didn't want to do this, who are now coming on board even more so than the little kids.
That is wonderful to hear.
Lisa, sorry, this is Dawn again. I will just say, and hopefully she'll share in more detail what she's done. Hers was more of a forceful or strong recommendation, changing her wording, and said that she has had almost no refusal since changing her message. So I'm excited to hear what and how she's presenting the vaccine. And also just wondered for myself if the contact person that I'm sending the emails to say to some of your change ideas is actually the person who's actually doing that, or if that is maybe the person who's entering the data, but maybe not part of the day-to-day things. And if that might be the case, then just encouraging people to check in with the rest of their team so that my contact person can send me their ideas.
That's good info. Yeah, let Dawn or me know, and we'll pass that on to each other if it turns out that we should be sending some emails to someone else. All right, then we are going to go ahead and turn the time over to Dr. Cosgrove.
Good morning, this is Bill Cosgrove. I want to kind of clarify one thing. The strong provider recommendation, that's not magic. When you look at the role we pediatricians play, we are accepted into these families as a family member. Our role as advisor is such that we're kind of a team member. The family is carrying their load through their child's life, and we get to carry the other end of the pole. So they take us with them in their life's journey, and that gives us sometimes an overwhelming responsibility, but it also gives us a privilege. They let us into their lives. They ask for our advice. They expect our advice to be careful, thoughtful. They expect us to interpret the confusing scientific world for them because they have chosen us as their part of their family. And when we come across as sort of hesitant, it sounds like we don't know or we don't trust the data. When we come along and say, hey, you know, I care about you and I care about your child, and this is what I recommend. Just being forceful isn't pushy, but it sends a very strong, partly nonverbal message that this is what we believe, this is right. This is what, as we, their advisor, have sifted through all of the science and data, this is what we hope to give to their child. And so the strong provider isn't pushy, it's just confident. And if you're not confident in the message, delve into the data again. Go look at it. This is a very safe vaccine. You know, when you, one of the things that came across in one of our previous teleconferences is that the immune response from the vaccine is 45 times as strong as living through the illness. So, you know, we've got essentially a magical vaccine that we can be sort of fully confident in, and we just need to carry that confidence in the room. I think I'd mentioned one of these previous conferences that what I end up doing is that as I put my hand on the doorknob to go into that room, if I expect to go in and have a fight, I will have a fight. If I think of it as I have a gift to bring into this room, a gift to give to this family, a gift to give to this child, it all just works easily and magically. So the forceful recommendation isn't magic. It is getting your confidence up and then exuding that confidence with your message to the family. I don't think I have anything to add. I appreciate you all willing to get up early in the morning and share all of this. We are having a great response across all of our teams. Everybody's on track still to finish this project on time and get their MOC Part 4 credit. As you study what you do in your office, in your own, you know, when the door closes and you're alone with that family in the room, it's still just up to you. But you have a great gift. We can protect this next child from cancers. And that's an amazing gift. And that's a gift that you have in your hands. And you don't want to walk out of that room still carrying that gift. You want to leave that gift in the room. Any issues, questions, worries that you have, anything that you would like the rest of the teams to hear, why don't you, if you could quickly type that into the chat box and we will share them across the groups. And we have a question from Rebecca Kincaid. I've had really great success with the new 3-2 vaccine series and emphasizing that if you get the vaccine younger, then you have a better immunity response. And again, the strength of the immunity response is amazing. And it's, again, kind of like entering into the raffle. When you tell a family, hey, you know, if we just get this started today, we can get this done in 2 shots. And if we mull it over and think about it and read the internet and read the back of comic books, we can wait. Then your child will have to go through this three times. I think it's just another urge to the family to get it done. Get it done now. Again, we're talking about cancer. Why would we care about waiting? Any other questions? All right, I think we can wrap this up. I'm going to give it back to Lisa.
Terrific. It's been a great conference call this morning. Just again, reminder that if you have not signed in, if you would please do that. I will send out a recap email shortly. And our next call will be on May the 2nd at 7:30 in the morning. As always, if you have questions or concerns or things come up during the month, please reach out to me. I'm happy to help you connect with the people that you need to or answer any questions that you have. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next month.